Hi, and welcome to the third house. This is our first episode in English, so this is really exciting. We're expanding the podcast to an international audience. And so hi to my co-host Lotta. How are you?
Hi, I'm very well, apart from having a slight cold today. I'm still feeling a positive. My mindset is positive. That's what counts for me.
Yeah. Shall we maybe introduce ourselves really quickly for our English audience? I can say that my name is Charlie, and I have a Sagittarius sun, a Virgo moon, and a Cancer rising. You want to go too?
And me?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I have a Gemini sun, Cancer rising, just like Charlie, and a Scorpio moon. And my name is Lotta. Yeah, like you said in the beginning.
Yeah, cool. Okay.
So we could say that we practice. If you frame this podcast a bit, maybe we are practicing astrology, but we don't claim to be experts. We are rather trying to. We gather different people, different topics to discuss it. But this is also a great both a devotion and hobby for us as for many years.
Yeah. Definitely. And me and Lotta, we mostly practice Hellenistic astrology, but we both come from a modern background. So
I have a very modern background. No, just kidding. Okay, yeah, but modern astrology, yeah, sure. This is where it started. A lot of people start there, I think, or at least from our generation. Not that we are the same, but yeah.
Yeah, sure. And today we're going to talk about transits, and we're going to explain more about what that is. But first, I want to introduce our guest today. And usually we have our guests introduce themselves. So, Ainty, would you introduce yourself?
Yes, thank you so much for having me on the show. My name is Angie, known primarily on Instagram as Heaven Knows. I am a Scorpio sun, Aquarius moon, and Capricorn rising. My pronouns are she, her, and I've been practicing astrology since about 2018, so I'm just in the same boat as y'all. I'm learning. I am just discovering the whole language of astrology and loving it. And while I'm primarily focused in modern astrology and specifically birth chart astrology, my aim and my goal is to get into Hellenistic astrology as well one day. So very glad to be here.
Awesome.
Very welcome to be here. It's interesting to hear an aquamoon, as we had just had a full moon in Aquarius. And
yes.
I'm a bit curious to how it affected you. I don't know, maybe we shouldn't jump to really personal stuff, but still curious.
See, as a Scorpio sun, I am all or nothing. Either I'll be like, that is way too private, or I will overshare. So hang on to your seats. Mm-hmm. It kind of floored me. My emotions have been up and down. Now, there was a pretty wide gap. I tend to be very restrictive on my conjunctions. So if we say my natal moon is in like 11 degrees of Capricorn and this one was in like 19 degrees, is pretty far out, but I felt absolutely exhausted. I came home from work yesterday. I was in bed for the rest of the day, but today I feel great. So how did this full moon affect the two of you?
Well, could we just explain what a transit is, because this this ties into what the theme
for
this
of the show is. Absolutely. Yeah. May I?
Yes.
Thank
please
you.
Do.
Well, this is my interpretation. When you look at a birth chart, it's essentially a snapshot of the sky from the time and place when you're born. You see exactly where the planets are and which zodiac signs and which houses. And you know, the planets don't stop there once you're born. They'll keep moving. And as they move around the sun, they're going to form angles to where the planets were when you're born. And this makes personal impacts on our lives. So you know, the moon goes around the whole circle once a month. So the moon tends to hit everything, all our planets and all our personal placements every month. Whereas a lot of other planets are much slower. Let's look at the farthest one out we know of so far, Pluto, will take 230 to 250 years to go full circle around. Now, I hope I said that right. But my point is that as the different planets move around the sky, they're going to form angles, either line up exactly where another planet was or be 90 degrees away or 180 degrees away. And that's what we look at when we're looking at transits, the traffic, the movement of how the moving planets affect where they were when we were born. If either one of you have a better explanation, then please go ahead.
No, this is about, yeah, exactly. We can look at, yeah, the transits is like more about the day-to-day astrology, whereas the birth chart is, okay, these were the transits, this was what's happening when you were born, and this is what we mostly refer to when we make birth charts. And when we do a reading of somebody, you look at their birth chart, and you also look what are the transits right now, where are the planets in relation to your, where they are in your birth chart, and how might that affect you, and also the rulers of this house and so on. And there's saying we're not expert in astrology is because I think it's very hard to become an expert. There's always more to learn. So you have to be very humble, or I get very humble as I go along with this topic.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think of transits, they can be like explained as what is happening in the sky right now.
Yeah.
And that it can affect everybody. So you don't have to relate it to the native's birth chart. You can just look at it, what was happening in the world right now too. But today we might be talking more about like personal transits, which are relative to the native's birth chart.
Yeah. Yeah, you have all sorts of you can, when you read this in like the in magazines, these weekly horoscopes, and they relate it to all the people born in this month, for example, like for a Taurus, this is your month, and so it's going to be broader and not so specific. If you relate it to your own birth chart, it would be more specific, and you can relate it to a country even, or the earth, or you can make it big or small.
Yeah, when I'm looking at transits, of course, there's the day-to-day aspect. If you're going to forecast a horoscope for the day or for the week, the month, or even the year. But on a broader spectrum, it's also possible to look at these, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is here, but these pivotal moments in life that affect us, our maturity, our growth, our struggles and gifts and journeys, that happen to pretty much all of us. Saturn is a big one. Saturn is the planet of structure and order, its maturity, and really about maturing through hardships and struggles, gaining wisdom through experience. And this is really a good milestone, that was the word I was looking for, that helps us to see where are we in our path of maturity. So when Saturn is 90 degrees away from where Saturn was when we were born, that's our first real Saturn transit, then that's when we're about 7 years old. And I know some parents joke as 7 years old as the little puberty or whatever. This is when they first get a little rebellious or a little moody. They kind of start school. They may have friendships and relationships where they start seeing conflict. And that also, it's character building. It's not always easy, but it's something that kids really mature through. And after that, at around age 14, Saturn is opposite across from the chart from where it was when you were born. And needless to say, most of us remember 14 as a tough year. Things change. Things are suddenly a little harder than they were before. New expectations, new structures to follow, having to put up goals and ambitions, and just trying to be an adult when you're really just a kid. So a lot of people can resonate with the struggles of the Saturn opposition, which is what we'd experience at that time. And then, of course, just like when we were seven, there's another Saturn square 90 degrees away from where it was when we were born at around 21. And that, too, It's usually when most of us either move out or gain significant relationships. Some people have kids or make career changes. This is also a huge step in maturity and experience, and it's not always easy. But the one that most of us experience as, I will never forget that. You can ask anybody, regardless of whether they're familiar with astrology or not. If you ask, what happened when you were about 29, 30 there somewhere? They're like, oh boy, that was the year I bought my house and took out loans or got a promotion or had kids, got married, moved to another country, you name it. That's usually the big welcome to adulthood, this rite of passage that brings its own struggles and challenges that really help us see what we're capable of, help us to understand, wow, I handled that. I can handle anything from here on out. So the big Saturn return is a classic life transit that most of us are familiar with.
Yeah, I can say that I work something in a clinical setting, and then I meet I can sometimes meet people who are or come across life stories where they're around the 29 to see there's a lot happening then. There's things are shifting. You're turning things a bit upside down. You get many hard lessons to learn. And it can be tough for some. It's a tough lessons, but you always, if you go through it, you can come out much stronger, which is nice. But it also, when we were first talking about the Saturn, the first square of Saturn, I was thinking about this the relationship. This seven-year crisis in the relationship is when the relationship has its first Saturn. Square.
That's true.
It's some kind of a return, I think, but the actual return comes after 30 year, I guess. But this is when you mostly hear about Saturn or relationships having their first or major crisis. Should we stay or should we go, basically? And that happens at this 7 year.
That 7 year itch, the make or break line.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Saturn can also be very like heavy and depressive, mm-hmm. and stuff like that, because like the Saturn return and all of that, it can be very positive and you can get a lot from it, but as you say, it can
in the end
mm-hmm. but it can also be super tough. Like I remember a personal transit that I went through when Saturn was in Sagittarius a couple of years ago. My son is at 27 degrees Sagittarius, mm-hmm. so Saturn went conjunct my son, and that was just so hard, and I think I got depressed, and I think that changed me a lot, and like I've become a more serious person since then, or like matured and all of that, but that was
really hard. You need some more Jupiter transits.
Yeah.
Yeah, I absolutely resonate with that. It's interesting because when I went through my own life transits, I thought my Saturn square was the worst chapter of my life. It was deeply depressive and pretty destructive. I'm not going to get too personal, but I kept thinking, if that's how bad my Saturn square was, how terrible is my Saturn return going to be? What I didn't think about at the time is that my Saturn square at the age of 21 also coincided with being conjunct my moon and it was also conjunct the moon. Saturn square was also conjunct the sun and square to the moon. So there was a lot going on at once there in the planetary transits. It wasn't just a Saturn square or just Saturn conjunct the moon or Saturn conjunct the sun. It was all of this at once. So thankfully, my Saturn return was very benevolent in comparison. So heads up for everybody who hasn't yet gotten to your Saturn return. Doesn't just have to be awful. It doesn't just have to be struggles and hardships and depression. A lot of times there are other planets also playing in. But yeah, I resonate with that.
And hardships make you stronger.
Absolutely.
If you let them. If they don't break you.
I think that's a very good Saturn energy there. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
Like it, yeah.
Absolutely.
I think about like how we need to be a little bit nice with Saturn and just not be like, what are you throwing at me? Like I remember like it was just 2 days ago or something that I was like, damn you, Saturn, or like Saturn is nasty or something like that. And then I was like, I realized like, no, I'm really insulting Saturn right now. And Saturn is a helper to a teacher. So could be thought of like, it could be thought of like a grandfather, a harsh grandfather or grandmother. Some think of Saturn as feminine and or neutral. So
no, exactly. I think a lot of us associate Saturn with an authority figure, and I can resonate with that too. How often don't we think, oh, my boss is the worst person ever, or my more dominant parent is the worst person ever, or whatever, and then we realize the challenges this person is bringing me is because they have faith in my ability to grow. They're giving me responsibility and challenges because they want to see me handle these in ways that will help me later on. So a lot of times it comes with that maturity. We can look back and go, okay, I shouldn't be too mad at Saturn. I do understand the purpose here.
Yeah, that's beautifully expressed. The goodness of Saturn.
Yeah.
Hardships.
You gotta appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. And Saturn, the Saturn return is probably the one you care most about when you talk about the transits. I don't know if we should skip to the next one and which one is in line. You know, I struggle to choose a bit.
Oh, I'm choosing which planet to talk about next in transits. Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. Because first I was looking at the nodal returns, and that's not really a planetary return. The node is more of a mathematical point calculated based on other things in the chart. But that comes back when your true node returns all the way back to where it was when you were born. This happens at about 19 and again at about 38 and 57 and 75. This is when we go through a learning lesson that kind of points to preparing us for our purpose or our learning journey, whatever it is our soul needs to pick up, which is often very outside of our comfort zone. So you can think about that too. When we're about 19, that's a little bit of a preparation for that Saturn square at 21, that I'm learning something new here and it's really tough. And then there you go. But a lot of times it's very rewarding too by the time it's over.
Yeah, but the nodes are also, so they are related to the eclipses, and the eclipses were really high markers really early in the history as well. But there was an eclipse, it was a big message in the sky, especially the solar eclipses. But so for that to have a message is quite, it's quite natural to do make the connection.
Yeah, no, definitely. But then the midlife, and I do think it's a little misleading to call it midlife, because in this day and age, we live so long, generally speaking. So I think it's pretty early, but the Neptune square, when Neptune is 90 degrees from where it was when you were born, this is often like a slow phase of confusion, illusions, things aren't quite like you think they are. And this can cause some big changes when you start to wake up from this. And this generally happens for about 40, 42 somewhere. But Neptune can also be about spirituality and creativity. So this is often, you know, that midlife crisis or the 40-year crisis when people are suddenly like, oh, you know what? I think this one person has got to be my soulmate, somebody I totally just met and pick up and leave, or want to go travel through New Zealand and go find themselves, or suddenly have some kind of spiritual awakening and a little bit of a personality change. Or sometimes in the worst cases, you know, you're in a relationship with somebody and it goes so slow and so gradual, and you just don't really see how it's disintegrating. So you think my relationship is fine. And then all of a sudden the other person is like, this is not working. We're getting a divorce. And it's just this sudden shattering of illusions of, wait a minute, what's wrong? And they're like, well, everything, where have you been? So this is also a big momentous chapter in a lot of people's lives. They're somewhere between 40 and 42, where it's kind of like, I didn't see this coming. It came out of left field, or, you know, I don't really understand what's going on or where my focus has been. Sometimes we kind of lose focus about what's the purpose and where do we want to be? But what's interesting is often shortly after that or around the same time, Uranus forms an opposition exactly across from where it was when we were born, usually around the age of 42. And Uranus, you know, it brings sudden changes, the unexpected, can turn things upside down in interesting ways. And this could be life-changing, sometimes for better and sometimes not so much. Kind of depends on what other aspects you have going on. But, you know, first you'll go through this little phase of just kind of going through the motions in a fog. And then all of a sudden, bam, you wake up and you remember, this isn't what my life is supposed to be about. This isn't who I am. And you make all the changes. And if you don't make the changes happen to you to realign you with who you are and where you want to be. I love that Uranus is often associated with eccentricity and just following your own unique path, breaking free, being a rebel and doing your own thing. So sometimes
fantastic stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So you can look at somebody who's about 42 and all of a sudden they do something completely unexpected. And you're like, where did this come from? I didn't know you wanted to make that career change, or I didn't know this was something in your identity that you wanted to express, or whatever it can be that just comes to the surface. And it's really something that I think we all have cooking inside us for a long, long time. And when that Uranus opposition shows up, it's like, now we're ready. Let's go. Let's do this. That can be kind of interesting.
Mm. Yeah, for sure. And I hear more and more people actually speaking about the Uranus the opposition or return, or how this affects them. I mean, the Saturn return has become it's more of a concept, a more well-known concept. But even here, people speaking more about Uranus return than I did some years ago. So it's becoming more relevant to people, and as astrology grows, I think.
I've heard of the Uranus return named as the second childhood. You know, when somebody's about 84 years old and suddenly you just don't care what anybody thinks anymore. You just do your own thing. And I love that. Sometimes it can kind of seem like they've returned to a childhood, a little bit of a rebellious phase, a little bit of a eccentric, odd behavior. But I love that idea of just getting to the point in your life's maturity where you're like, I do what I want now. Mm, I look forward to that. Exactly.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I think of my grandma when I worked in like healthcare and like taking care of elders and like seeing these quirky people.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it's cute.
That's precious.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one planet we haven't talked about is Pluto. You know, Pluto, it may be so far out, but it brings these big, massive transformations. Now, Pluto is also associated with death and rebirth. And I think of that. Those of us who have experienced Pluto transits, like when Pluto lines up with where planets were in our birth charts or when we were born, this can create transformations where it's almost like there's a part of us that has to die to make space for something new within us to be born. And I know that this is big and scary. And for a lot of us, it's like, oh no, I'm falling apart, or everything is over now. But it's not until we step back and look back and see, okay, you know what? No, that was a new chapter for me. This is when this opened up. This is when I finally did this. And that can be really life-changing. And Pluto does, in a lifetime, make a square, which can be challenging. It can be like a transformation that's tough and hard. And the thing is, Pluto, because it takes so long, can retrograde and go back and forth. But somewhere around 37 to 43 years old, it'll form this square, creating big changes for us to adapt to, almost forcing us to rebuild something from the ground. But just as well, got things to look forward to. When we're about 50, 60 there somewhere, Pluto can form a trine. forgive me, I've lost the number of angles and degrees.
120.
Thank you. There it is. My math is out the window. So when Pluto forms about 120 degrees from where it was when we were born, that's more of a positive transformation. This is usually where people find their way back to who they want to be at retirement or close to retirement or becoming grandparents or finally getting that summer house in that tropical country they'd always dreamed of. It's making these positive transformations where you finally feel like Nice. Yeah, I can go ahead and change everything that's ever was and everything that was expected of me and be who I want to be now, live how I want to live, watch positive things happen. And that's beautiful.
Yeah. I remember very clearly like the destructive but also rebirthing moments of Pluto transiting the birth chart in like 2015 when because I got a Cancer rising, so Pluto was transiting my seventh house and the descendants, which is about relationships to others, and I went through a massive change in how I relate to other people and my intimate or close relationships with like family and stuff like that. I moved out of my childhood home very like suddenly, like a Monday morning, just like right then. It was just something that needed to happen, and it just broke down so many relationships, but it also created new opportunities and all of that. So it was super Plutonian.
Wow.
Yeah, well, what we can say at this moment is also that we have the transits we're talking about, that Andy's talking about, comes from how they relate to your the position of your natal Pluto. Like if it's Pluto, is and how does Pluto relate to the natal Pluto? But sometimes we have transits where the current planet is relating to some other place in your birth horoscope, and that's also. And will also affect, regardless of we have this general age limits when these things tend to happen to most people, but you also have your personal transit regarding where your planets are in your personal horoscope. Just to make
sure. I want to absolutely. I'm going to get personal here. I hope that's okay.
Super okay.
When I was going through my own transits and I was looking at when Pluto lined up with my natal Venus. I'm thinking, okay, transformation in relationships and relating with others. And it was in the 11th house too. So it seemed like it should be about a group setting, community, something like that. And I'm trying to think, well, what happened? But it wasn't until now that I can look back and go, oh, wow, I was only 8 years old. And I mean, you don't think eight-year-olds really have relationships or anything like that. But for me, I'd been homeschooled in the States the whole first grade. So when my Pluto conjunct, when Pluto transited over my natal Venus, I moved to Sweden. I joined a class of peers my age. It was Swedish and it was, you know, new and different. And interestingly, in that class was the person who is now my life partner. Even though I moved back to the States a couple of years later and spent many years there, and to be fair, I hated him. We were not friends. It was not love at first sight. It was not lovely anywhere. He was my arch nemesis, and I never said a word to him. But it's so cool to look back and see when Pluto lined up with Venus, this really was a life-changing event of meeting the person who would later be my forever person. That was kind of cool. Or what I hope is my forever person, obviously. Yeah. Even though we moved apart and didn't see each other for, what, 10, 15 years until we... 10 years, actually. Till we met again. So yeah, sometimes cool. Yeah, Pluto can change things even if we don't know right in the moment what that change was. You can look back later and go, oh my goodness, wow.
Yeah. And the Pluto Venus transits are or this combination is a really classical one of the it brings my mind to Hades and Persephone.
Yeah,
the underground. And I think in the, when you say that you hated him, you know, I don't think Persephone was so keen on Hades in the beginning either. But she went back there in the end. Huh?
Yep, that's what happened. I came back to Sweden in the end and happily ever after. That's interesting. Now, next up, we have the Chiron return. I know not all astrologers work very actively with Chiron, but I'm very fascinated by this. Yeah, it is an asteroid that it's also known as the wounded healer, because it does speak to some kind of inner wound, some kind of inner pain that we may sustain in early childhood or early on in our life, that even before we can identify it, it is something that comes up in themes and can show up in different ways with different people and different dynamics, but it's something within us that triggers and hurts. And when we identify this, when we start to work on that healing process, working on our shadow stuff and figuring out, maybe going to therapy or journaling or talking to friends or working on it. When Chiron comes all the way back to where it was when we were born, we're around 50 years old. And you'll see the difference here in the people who have put in the work and identified their wound. And this ends up being a really healing chapter, something very beautiful. Whereas sometimes you'll see people who they hit that Chiron return and suddenly it's like a lifetime's worth of lessons in having to identify and work with and actively make efforts to heal this all happens at once. So this is a really cool one for me to talk to with people who have already had their Chiron return to what happened when you were around 50. What was that like for you? And I love when I hear examples of people who do identify, this was my inner wound, this was what hurt. And when I found a way to heal this and work on it in that process, life brought me other people who I could identify that same wound in, and I could help to guide them and give them, you know, nurturing direction and help them on their healing journeys because I could see the same behavior in them. And I just love that, like paying it back, making that pain worth it somehow. So I'm hoping that by the time I'm 50 something, I've got it together and I can be a help for other people. But yeah, this is a huge part of our life here. I think that's beautiful.
And I think this generally is the whole matter of things, that whatever it brings you, to keep the mindset strong or positive enough to use what you've been dealt. And this is your task. This is how I see it, is what you are meant to accomplish in this life. There's your map. This is what you get. So it's up to you what you do about it. It can be harsh to say this so straightforwardly, but I think in the end this is a bit our duty, our call, and our partly responsibility, but also an opportunity to make the most of your life. I do a lot of work with like life calls and vocation and purpose. I think these questions are quite interesting generally, and when you can also I think the horoscope can be used as some kind of as a tool to map these things out, to get closer to where you are, who you are, what am I here for, what do I want to do, but in a dialogue with the client when you have personal horoscopes. And Chiron is an important one, for sure.
Let me just say, my Sagittarius Mercury loves it when people just say it like it is, don't sugarcoat it. So from my heart, thank you. Oh, that's great.
Ooh, Sagittarius Mercury.
Yes!
Oh, those are the worst.
There's no in between. Sagittarius Mercury's, you either love them or hate them, but it always makes things interesting.
You gotta love them, but you gotta be in the mood for it.
Oh yeah.
You don't
there's
always
a time
want the
there's
harsh
a place
right? No, it can be hard to get harsh truth if you're not fit for it at the moment.
Oh, exactly. Mm-hmm. I get that. No, that's neat.
Mm-hmm. So Jupiter then.
Right. Jupiter works in 12-year cycles. So every 12 years-ish, we have what we call the Jupiter return. And usually, you know, Jupiter has long been associated with luck, but also expansion, growth. It's kind of like a magnifying glass that suddenly puts the big focus on one area. And some people, this is so subtle that you barely notice. It can be a transit that lasts, you know, a month, barely, and then it's gone. But think of that as every 12 years, you have a sudden area of focus of this is where I'm growing. This is what's important. And it can usually be a pretty happy time or good things happen. So Jupiter can bring positive influences, sometimes very subtly and sometimes very drastically. I don't know if either one of you have an example that we can share.
I'm thinking of something that could also be said about transits in general, is that because the birth chart, there's a couple of different ways to look at it, but in like the Hellenistic tradition, we see the different houses of the chart, like they don't have to be about you as an individual, per se, but it can be like if it transits your seventh house, as an example, it can like if you have a very good Jupiter transit in your seventh house, it could be a good thing for your partner.
Oh yeah,
Or
in a
like
big
if there
house,
is
maybe for
a
your friends or for the 11th and your community where you are engaged in or so.
Cool.
Yeah, the Hellenistics do it more like that. Cool.
But it's a little funny. I've heard stories of people who are like, I'm gonna have a Jupiter return, and then it's in their seventh house, and it just happens good things to the partner, and they get a little bit salty about it.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I can recognize that. Interesting. Out of curiosity, I don't know if the eighth house has any different significations in Hellenistic astrology than it does in modern. I tend to think of, Scorpio influences transformation, rebirth, but also heavy things, challenges, death. But a Jupiter return in the eighth house, I'm like, is that expansion within the darkness, expansion within death? But I think
It
my
can also
experiences have been
be
pretty positive.
things. It can also signify other people's money inheritance or
Ooh,
investments.
right.
Yeah, so it can be something great happening with that.
Interesting.
Yeah, I have Jupiter in the eighth, actually.
I gotta double check. I hope I'm not lying to you. I think I got Jupiter in the eighth. Now, granted, I use glasses, which is pretty messy, so my housing system is not quite as organized as it is for y'all. But yeah, nope, I got Jupiter in the eighth. We got the same thing. Cool.
Oh, yeah.
Cool.
Mice in the 12th.
Wow.
So they
Can
were a
I
bit
ask, do you have any
strange.
Jupiter return experience that's not too personal to share?
Maybe ask again later.
Yes.
I have, maybe I have, I'm not sure. I have to think about it actually.
Cool.
But the 12th house is always tricky. And actually, Jupiter is, yeah, it depends on you. I hear so many different stories about what Jupiter can signify in the 12th, but I also have it in a wide conjunction with my sun. And I think Lilith is in between for those who go into deep into that.
Wow.
So the sun at 8 degrees and then the Jupiter at 12.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's interesting. Yeah, I'm still learning about myself, but I think it's sometimes it's harder to see in a way. It's sometimes it's harder to see your own transits,
Oh,
especially
yeah.
when you're a bit of a 12th houser, because it's so yeah, it can be a bit not so straightforward as you have it in the
Yeah.
first house and in the 10th, like on an angle or so. The 12th is always a bit from the side, a bit hidden, and can be hard for yourself to see it, I
Oh
think.
yeah. I get that. Actually, I hope it's okay that I'm jumping to Saturn here, but in relating to how transits can affect other people around us, I was looking at, well, when Saturn was conjunct my IC, so my fourth house, home and family life, I'm like, well, what was that? And it coincides with my mother's Saturn return. That's when both her grandfather died and my mom's mother died. And it was just a lot of hardships all at once. And of course, that brought Saturn energy into the home and family life. And, the IC home it can be related to the mother as well. So it was her struggles and
Your
challenges in coping
ancestors.
that, even if it didn't affect me so directly, that was still an impact. And it's cool when you can watch the synastry of how two charts can affect each other when a transit comes around. And okay, cool. It was different transits for us, but it affected us both similarly. It's interesting.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, when you just brought up a whole new topic of comparing charts
Yeah.
between generations and so,
Oh, yeah.
and how things it will inherit in the family structure,
Yeah.
the family
But
line.
it like illustrates pretty beautifully like how complex astrology is.
Oh
Like
yeah.
it's beautiful. It's a beautiful language.
I love that. Now, we've talked about transits in relating to the outer planets and Jupiter and the ones that are further out. But if we're looking at a closer day-to-day horoscope or a weekly horoscope, we're going to be looking more at the inner planets, Sun, Moon, Mercury, Venus, Mars. Do you guys have any examples of aspects between those two that you want to relate?
Well, I'm thinking a little bit about like the upcoming long Mars transit that we're going to have in Gemini, because Mars will go retrograde in a little while. And it will be in my 12th house, which is not very exciting.
A retrograde
for
in
me.
The 12th house. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you. But like, because most of the inner planets transits are like pretty, they come and they go very fast. But sometimes when they are retrograde, then it will be a much longer transit. So that is also something to take consideration to. So.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, the Mars transits, especially in the Hellenistic. Before I go into this, I'm curious of your perspective, Andy, of the Mars transit from a more modern perspective.
Mm-hmm.
How do you interpret them?
I tend to associate Mars with action, with the physical body, sometimes health, sometimes strong bursts of emotion like anger, passion, explosion. Sometimes we associate it with classical masculinity, about wanting to take control, but I suppose control is more of a Pluto thing. But also Mars, you know, it's behavior, it's what we do. So, for example, when thinking about Mars going through Gemini, I wonder how this is going to affect us in taking a step back from our actions to watch how much our actions are affected by the energies and the people around us, about how much is affected to us on an intellectual level, because Gemini is associated with the mind. You know, can we really step back and think before we act, or is this going to be a case of us doing and then thinking? And I don't know. I'm sorry I'm being so convoluted here, but it's a big subject.
Yeah.
But how do you interpret Mars from a Hellenistic perspective, can I ask?
You know, that's what I was going to come to. This, they tend to have a more more of a like a concrete physical effect. It can be like maybe you accidentally, when you chop vegetables, maybe you accidentally cut yourself, or you have maybe or you hurt yourself or something by a Mars transit. But it doesn't have to be physical. It can also be like some kind of outburst. But normally Mars is seen as more of a negative planet, whereas Venus is more of a positive planet. Like
I get that.
You get the benevolent and the maleficent energies going on. But Mars especially they say if you're born during the day, then your Mars is your planet to, as I am, for example, then Mars is your planet to watch out for. And if you're in the night, then Saturn has a higher, stronger impact, or Saturn has a more, and as well as, Jupiter is more benevolent or beneficial, beneficiary for you if you're born in the day, and Venus is your go-to planet if you're born at night.
Yeah.
So they have a bit of different effects on and also on your own horoscope. Which house is it in your horoscope?
Oh, yeah.
And then, are there any planets there? And what houses do they rule? So there's always something to map out around it. But generally, what do you say, Charlie? Do you have something else to say about Mars transits from a Hellenistic perspective?
Yeah, I was actually thinking.
And burns and
yeah, it's like accidents and stuff like that. But I actually have a concrete example of a Mars transit that happened like on a big scale, on the mundane level, and that was in 2020. In the summer of 2020, there was a big explosion in Beirut. If you remember that, because it was like it was a big accident. It was some kind of storage of explosives that went off by accident, and it killed a lot of people, and it was horrible. Whoa. And then by then Mars was square to Jupiter. I think it was Mars and Jupiter at least. So that was horrible, but that can be a real manifestation of a Mars transit, so
Absolutely.
it's a little bit of a beware
Yeah.
thing about it. Yeah.
This is a totally opposite end of the spectrum, but I was thinking about, the old song, The Age of Aquarius. I think it's by like the fifth dimension. They sing in the lyrics, they're like, when the moon is in the seventh house and Jupiter aligns with Mars and something like that. They're kind of talking about getting together, having a good time.
Yeah.
But yeah, when you think Jupiter and Mars put together, yes, there could absolutely, I mean, it could go both ways. Could be an expansion of an explosion. It could be, an anger outburst that gets huge. But it could also be like a sudden burst of energy, a sudden drive to move forward. And that's kind of cool. Sorry,
I
I got
think you also
song
have
lyrics
to,
stuck in my head.
No, but I think you have to also think of there's difference with it when there's a transit, and if you look at a person, at the personality, like
Oh,
for
yeah.
example, I think Mars, and from my experience, people who have Mars and Jupiter conjunct can be very, very driven to action. It doesn't have to be
Yeah.
this and these are the both yeah, this is both the from a day chart, this is both the most positive and most negative. But
Yeah.
I tend to, yeah, negative. Then you think, yeah, well, squares are negative, trines are positive. But we don't only want trines. We don't only we don't we not we don't want to be without the squares, because the
Exactly.
challenges will form us. Now we're
Oh,
back to
yeah.
the Saturn topic, and I think the squares are and oppositions are more tricky, as the conflicting energies and the conjunction,
Yeah.
which is more of uniting energy. When you have bit difficult to see one planet for the other, they can they work in symbiosis this will this is a different energy, as well as the transit differ from transits differ from how the energies work in your natal chart,
Yeah,
I
good
think.
distinction there. Yeah.
Definitely. Ooh, transit that most people, even non-astrology people, tend to become more aware of now. Mercury, when Mercury retrogrades, I know we make such a big deal out of it every time, but it happens like 3 times a year. But it's to the point where this is flooding Instagram and everywhere people are aware of it. They're like, oh no, it must be Mercury retrograde. I
Who
just
has
bought
something
a.
to blame?
No, exactly. I just got a candle from Libra Moon Studios. It's a designer here in Sweden who makes cool stuff. But it says, light this candle in case of Jupiter or in case of Mercury retrograde. And I just like, I love this. It's
Break
gonna
this
go so
glass.
fast. Exactly. Break in case of Mercury retrograde. Do we want to talk about this? This is a pretty significant transit that affects all of us, but maybe not in the ways that everybody seems to think. I think a lot of people are like, oh no, everything is wrong, everything is bad. But no, I really feel like as long as you take a step back, analyze, what is it, the astrologer Jessica Lanyadu from Ghost of a Podcast, she likes to say it's for the reuse, review, reanalyze, reassess, I mean, it's just go back and look at it again, read the contract a second time, double check if you're unsure about something. Double check what time you're going to be at the appointment just to make sure you're actually aware. It's a really good time to step back and create a mindfulness and an awareness, because otherwise we're just in go, go, go motion when Mercury is in direct motion. So the retrogrades are a little bit of a blessing in disguise sometimes to get us to stop and look back and think. Do you have
Yeah.
anything you want to add there?
I could just say that a retrograde is when a planet is, seems to be moving backwards, so it's much slower, or it goes through the a specific place in the birth chart a lot longer than usual.
Yeah.
And it also has different speeds. Mercury have very different speeds from the perspective of the Earth. It can go very fast from our perspective. Like, it can moving fast through the sign. It can move. It can be still, and it can seem to move backwards, as with all planets in retrograde. But Mercury has a has the can it can transit quite fast through the signs, and it's always close to the sun, as is Venus. But yeah, the Mercury, the re of the retrogrades, Then the Mercury is the one who's has most media space coverage
Yeah.
for
But
sure.
this is kind of cool. When I'm not doing astrology and other stuff, I am actually a support technician. And it was neat a while
How
back to be able to look
mercurial.
at our, yeah, it was neat to look at our, we got statistics on when we get the most spikes in problems that our customers would report. And it was so clear there were three spikes in the year and they coincided in line perfectly with the Mercury retrograde. So my team leader at the time does not believe in astrology for Jack. But I told him, these are the dates we're going to have the spikes in this upcoming year. And I remember showing him that when the statistics came out. And I'm like, look at that spike. What did I tell you? And he looked afraid. And he's like, doesn't this scare you to know when bad things are going to happen? And I just cracked up. He's thinking about it like being able to predict bad things. But in reality, I'm aware that these are misunderstandings. These are people who are rushing. This is a time where your electronics are not functioning the way they should. This is a great time when people are calling the support office before they try turning it on and turning it off again. These simple basic things. I just had to crack up about that and I'm never going to forget that. But watching the spikes in tech support, the problems that come up, the things that people would call about was always distinctly more during Mercury retrogrades. That was
Wow,
cool.
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Interesting. But we
Yeah.
know
Yeah.
that.
Mercury
Astrology, we
rules
know.
technology, that's one thing. So that's The
why.
whole world collectively lost their mind when Twitter and Instagram and Facebook went down. They're like, oh, what's going on? This isn't supposed to happen. And all of us are like, psst, Mercury retrograde.
Yeah. Sounds like a dream.
Exactly. Yes. It's kind of cool.
So one thing is that we haven't gone through is the Sun and Venus.
In modern astrology, we associate the sun with identity, ambition, motivation, the basic foundation of a personality. But I'm thinking of it from a wider perspective. How would you see the sun transits as affecting the collective?
Well, they rule the months of the year. The sun is really ruling a lot on Earth
Yeah.
generally, in to an extent that we don't have to be astrological about it in a way. This is a short version.
Yeah, absolutely. When the sun moves into Cancer season, we're like, all right, let's get cardinal. Let's bring on the change. Let's do the things and then sweep away what no longer belongs and make things happen. But also about getting emotional, getting intuitive. And of course, Leo season, when the sun is in Leo. I love this season so much. Everybody's happy. It's party. It's wear your best clothes. It's go on vacation. It's go have fun and take lots of pictures and be with your friends and feel good and be proud. Parents who get to spend that month with their children because you're not in school, really just letting out these creative forces and let's go have fun, do things. I love that. That is actually, come to think of it, the greatest example I can think of a sun transit that affects all of us. Who doesn't love when the sun is transiting through Leo? Ooh.
Yeah. My favorite is that maybe I'm not biased, but my favorite is when it's the when it goes through Gemini
Ah, it's a good one too.
because of all this curiosity in the air and
Oh, yeah.
things are like popping up and this there's an overflow of energy when it
Yeah.
starts things start to get brighter and everything starts to move everywhere. But then
Yes.
I'm also from the but this is from the northern hemisphere, we should
Oh,
say.
that's true. I personally have zero perspective of what this is experienced like in the southern hemisphere. So any listeners in Australia, go ahead and let us know.
Yeah, I think it is the same though. It will be in the winter time instead of the summertime, but it seems like the astrology is working very well. Like the astrologer Kelly Surtees is from Australia,
Oh
for
yeah.
as an example, and she uses like the with the northern hemisphere perspective. So
Cool.
you don't have to switch the signs or anything, but
That's
it will
good.
be in another season. So.
Cool.
And Venus, the sun doesn't retrograde, so it's always a pretty fleeting transit.
Yes.
But Venus can do retrogrades and we have Venus returns like every
Is
one
it
and a
year and a
half
half?
year. Yeah.
I think so. And yeah, didn't Venus actually, I don't know when this episode is going to air, but at the moment that we are recording, I believe that Venus has just entered Leo. Is it today or yesterday?
Yesterday.
So that feels nice. I associate that with like feeling pride and connection and confidence in relationships, in togetherness, even in social interactions or partnerships, or even with, I tend to get more frivolous with spending money. Like I'm worth
Oh, that's why.
it. Yeah, so I've been really frugal and so good and just taking care of how to save and how to be responsible. And then all of a sudden from yesterday, I'm like, no, I'm gonna treat myself. I deserve this. I feel fabulous. Oh, and this is for my friend, and this is for this. And I'm like, right, Venus Leo, not great for my bank account, but great for my heart.
That's beautiful.
Once Leo goes back over, or I'm sorry, once Venus goes back into Virgo, then we're going to be a little more back to school, responsible with our heart and our money. I'm sure.
That can
Exactly.
be needed too.
Yeah.
Yeah,
But
balance,
shall we
ebb and
talk a little
flow.
bit about the Venus return? What happens when Venus returns? It's usually thought about as like as you can read the chart for when Venus returns and look at how your relationships are going to be for the next year and a half. That can be pretty interesting. Do you have
Yeah.
any more thoughts on that?
I personally haven't worked with that on a great extent. I generally consider Venus conjunct Venus or the Venus return to be just like a moment of appreciating love, appreciating togetherness, harmony, balance, relationships, beauty, finances. It's just about enjoying and pleasure. But if you have a deeper experience on how to use that in a predictive way, I'd love to hear more about that.
No, I haven't worked with it extensively. I've mostly just fiddled around with it.
Yeah.
But Venus from a Hellenistic perspective is maybe more about a union, is coming together, whereas Mars is separating, then that Venus is the energy which brings things together. And of course, it's a benefic. So it brings on good stuff, basically, especially if you were born at night.
Yeah.
So
Well,
it's more
someone
comforting.
mentioned because we were talking about the sun right now, but or Venus, but sun very close to now. And someone mentioned the solar return chart earlier. Shall
Yeah.
we take a look at that and then start to wrap it up?
Sure. I mean, everybody loves their solar return. Happy birthday. But that's kind of cool. I love how I've heard of people who will actually go to different countries to cast a new chart for their solar return, depending on what country they're in, that changes the houses, that changes the rising, to really see their year ahead through a different lens. And I would love to learn how to do this personally. Be like, nope, I've got to spend my solar return in Berlin or Zimbabwe or wherever it's going to make my life most beneficial for the year after. And then like track and follow and see how that affects. Now, I haven't really had the freedom to travel. I think most of us have been pretty locked down over the past 2 years because of that one thing. But when that stops or when that's totally over and it's just a lot more free to travel, I think that'll be a cool integration for a lot of us to affect our year to come based on where we celebrate our solar return. I haven't personally heard any concrete experiences or examples of how this has played out, but I'm fascinated by the idea. Do either one of you have anything to mention on that?
Well, you look at the specific degree that the sun is at your birth, and then you look at when it happens close to your birthday. It can be like a day before or
Yeah.
after on the day, but then you can take a look at how the coming year is gonna look. So that's pretty nice,
Yeah.
and the time is very important. So that's what you're thinking about, Angie, about like catching another rising sign, and, like traveling to another city or a country too.
Exactly.
Because it's looked at as like sealing your fate or something if you're in a specific location about how the coming year is going to be.
That is cool. Oh, there's so much for me to explore and learn and discover. I cannot wait to seal my fate in a cool way when I master that. I'll keep y'all posted. That's great.
Does anyone have anything else to bring up about transits? Any last thoughts?
I'll think of it when I'm not thinking of it. And in that case, I'll get back to y'all. But I got to say, I'm very happy with this conversation. Thank you so much for inviting me on board for this.
Thank you for coming.
It was really interesting to take part. It's always interesting to take part of different perspectives.
Yeah.
And and to get to go to dig down the topic is always it's a good brain gymnastics. Every time you go there and when you can nerd out a bit together.
Love that.
Yeah.
So Angie, we usually ask our guests, like, who inspires you astrologically, or what, or which people?
Right. Huge shout out to Chris Brennan. I love you if you're listening, non-romantically. And of course, Jessica Linyadu of Ghost of a Podcast. Super cool. And I think my favorite Swedish astrologer right now is Margareta Hedin. Kind of a badass energy there. So those are my astrological role models of the moment.
That's awesome. Thank you for that. And how can people find you if they want to book a consultation or something like that?
Cool. Find me on Instagram at Heaven Knows Podcast. It's not a podcast in the sense that this is. It's just a platform that I use to record birth charts. And that's where you can also listen to free readings that I've done to feel like, is this my kind of vibe? Is this what I'm interested in? What can you see in a birth chart reading? And all my information on how to book me is available on Instagram in the bio. One day I'll do the whole Facebook and website thing, but I haven't gotten there yet. So Instagram it is.
Yeah, but awesome. Okay, thank you so much for being here, and
thank you.
Yeah, thank you to all our listeners who have been watching or listening to this episode, and have a nice time.
Enjoy till next time.